Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe. And today we are talking all things Christmas food, menu planning, tablescaping, what to eat, when to eat it. And we are very excited to be recording on location in the home of Saima Khan, founder of the Hampstead Kitchen, a private dining company which caters for everyone from loyal locals — Sophie has hired them for a workshop she was running, and I have been to a party catered by them — to celebrities, politicians, and even royalty. We'll be trying to find out as much as we can about that, but first a word from our sponsors, Anthropology.
Have you done all your Christmas shopping yet, or are you a last minute merchant?
Well, I'm actually pretty organised at the shopping side of things, so much so I'm actually looking forward to a new year, new home refresh already.
Get you! Well, no surprise, I'm very last minute, and it's my husband. He's just impossible to buy for. Whereas me, I mean, I'll just point to him, to the Anthropology website, as there is literally nothing I don't like, from fashion to furnishings. It's all very up my street.
Same, same. Although my husband is hard too. So, you know what I do? I think of something he likes doing and then buy things for the room he might do it in.
What on earth do you mean?
So, mine likes books, but picking out a book is hard because everybody has different tastes. So, I might buy a lovely mug and then a new cushion because you want to curl up and be comfortable when you read, yes? And then you can build out from there and add a lovely faux fur throw and a set of bookends. And Anthropology is actually a really good one-stop shop, as they have all of those items in a style I can live with as well.
I see. Clever. Well, I love cushions too, and I see Anthropology have a selection of seasonal ones. I love the one that says, "Say it ain't snow." Do you like that? Snow? So? It's in my bright colour palette and has tassels, and there's a matching Vanessa throw that says fa-la-la-la-la on it. What a cool way to update the living room over Christmas.
Okay, well, if you're going full throttle with the typography, how about a natural coconut fibre doormat that says, "All is bright to greet guests to your door"?
Well, there's one thing my husband doesn't do, and that's wipe his feet before he enters the house. So that's it. That's his Christmas present sorted.
Bingo!
Well, if that's got you feeling inspired to do your Christmas shopping, our lovely sponsors Anthropology are offering you all a brilliant discount just in time for the big day. From the 1st to the 21st of December, receive 20% off Anthropology Home with the code SPARKLE. Exclusions apply. This offer is for home but does not include furniture, cannot be used in conjunction with any other offer, can only be used once, and does not apply to previous purchases. Oh, and is UK only. Find the web link down in the show notes.
And thank you to Anthropology for sponsoring The Great Indoors, and happy shopping to all of you.
So now on with the show. So Kate and I are snuggled up on this lovely stylish sofa inside the home of our guest, Saima Khan, who set up the Hampstead Kitchen by chance, actually. It was a friend's aunt's private chef who cancelled at the last minute, and Saima hesitantly agreed to step into the breach to provide a dinner for a group of guests arriving from all over the world. She turned up with her trusty spices and had to reinvent a traditional four-course French menu into a mezze-style banquet. She spent the evening pretending to be a private chef, so no one would know the original chef had vanished, and pulled it off so well that by the end of the evening, the guests were booking her to cook for their parties in both London and the south of France. For 2 years, she juggled private catering with her job in finance, until a chance meeting with a certain Warren Buffett in an airport lounge changed her life. They started chatting about life and risk-taking, and Saima invited him over for dinner. That dinner convinced her to leave her six-figure salary and secure career to focus fully on the Hampstead kitchen. Saima, welcome to the Great Indoors.
Welcome to my home.
It's so lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable. I might just nod off. Can you do the interview?
That sofa's quite dangerous, actually.
It's very comfortable, I will say that.
And he's called Alberto. He's Italian. And so he's the main man in my life. Just want to, you know.
Not Warren Buffett. Talk to me. Firstly, I'm not sure I'd recognise Warren Buffett if a fella over him in an airport lounge. But you invited him for dinner? I mean, who just casually invites a multi-billionaire person for dinner?
We just got chatting. Had a normal chat about he loves steak and Coca-Cola.
Right.
But anybody in finance would be fangirling, yeah, over Warren Buffett. So I just plucked up the courage to just talk to him, and we just got chatting. And the next thing I knew is I said, oh, if you're ever in New York, you know, come over for dinner. And I was working for his organization at the time. So a couple of months passed and his PA called. So Warren would like to come for dinner. And I'm like, what? I didn't tell too many people about it, to be honest, because nobody would really believe me. And then a couple of weeks before, the PA says that Warren has some friends in town that are in philanthropy, and I was already doing quite a lot of philanthropy in London and back home. And so I said, yeah, sure, of course, the more the merrier. I mean, when I cook for about 10 people. So I left work early, got home, started cooking and doing all my things, styling my table. And then I opened the door and I had Bill and Melinda Gates and Warren Buffett and his wife. And I was like, in my head, I was sort of saying all
freaking
these, like, what the hell is going on? I didn't process.
Yeah.
But how my mind works is like, okay, we can't process this right now. So let's just put that to one side and just behave normally. And then we just had a really lovely dinner, and when I forgot who they were coming in the kitchen, and I was making sort of like a lovely sort of Persian-style biryani. And then Melinda said, oh, we're having a fundraiser in a couple of weeks' time, and could I possibly help out? And I said, sure. And so that was the first time I went on the private jet, and I turned up with all my sort of ceramics. And so even the napkins that I have on the table today are about 30 years old.
Has Bill Gates used those napkins?
Yeah, of course. They're hand-woven napkins. Yeah. And I just took all my ceramics. I've been collecting ceramics for donkeys of years. And I turned up. And then when I saw the guests arrive, they were the Obamas, Clinton, Mike Bloomberg, the mayor of New York. And then I just thought, I literally thought I was going to vomit. And I couldn't speak. The Zuckerbergs were there, and they just loved the food. Because the whole thing, I set up the scene as like not having three plates and three forks. It was all about the sharing concept. And my food is quite simple and rustic. There's no smudges. There's no edible flowers on
it. No paintbrushes.
No, not at all.
I like the idea of making billionaires share, because I feel that's a good lesson for them. You don't take your own plate, you have to share it with everybody. That's a good concept.
Take away their cutlery.
Yeah, exactly. Eating with your hands. And also the philosophy is that if you're sat between two people, that you can't start your dinner until your neighbours have food. It's that's the proper sharing way to do it, and that's the culture that I've been born and brought up in. A plethora of dishes in the middle.
Yeah.
But you all share the dishes along, and then you sit and then enjoy it together.
Well, that's also quite nice, isn't it, for interaction. Eye contact, can you pass me this? Do try this, it's delicious. Yeah. It sort of opens up conversation to all the people who are around you.
And it's so much more relaxed. I remember once going to a very posh lunch. It was a work lunch, but it was in the boardroom of this company. It was one of those places where, you know, there were rows and rows of cutlery. And you know, I sort of knew which one to go for first, but the whole thing was incredibly intimidating, and there's so many different glasses and there's different wine with each course, and it's just, it's guaranteed to make you actually think, well, I'll just sit here and eat. You don't want to talk to people because you're so frightened.
You're concentrating which one.
Yeah, yeah. And you're so frightened that people are going to be really snobby if you pick up the wrong glass or, you know, the wrong fork. And so actually this, the notion of food the way you do it is so much nicer.
But what's really interesting is that I've done some pretty high-end dinners. And what I like is that you get so used to seeing that fine bone china. I mean, it's stunning. You know, it's measured in everything. And so many people do it. And but
well, so many people, perhaps, in the world that you get to pop in and out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I had lunch at Sophie's house yesterday. There was no measuring. Do you know what she did? She put the saucepan of soup on the table, right like that.
But do you know what that means, though? That means that that's true love, though. Yeah. Well, you don't have to.
Should we go with that?
Yeah, tell you what. No, but we are a marriage made in heaven, because you picked up the soup from Waitrose at the train station.
Yes, she'd forgotten.
And I heated it up in the pan. And knocked it on the table. That's how much we love each other. Yeah. Okay.
That's true love. That's
Let's go with that.
Exactly. But also, when you walk into a dining table, when you see the same setup, your brain switches off visually, right? So then you just kind of go as a robot, and then you eat. And you have the canapes, which all look the same. They're all pretty. Mm. So when you do something a bit more out of the box, where it's completely pared back, and there's like flowers and pomegranates, or it's piled up high rather than individual thing, and people can have their own cocktail stick and then do it, you engage people's sort of senses, right? It yes. smells different, it looks different. So people are going to be more focused on what they're eating. And so this is the thing we get commented all the time. Even this morning, I have rushed from an event in Berkshire, and, you know, the house I cooked in was stunning, absolutely beautiful, like a 20-seater table. And I could see all the crockery that was in there, you know, the Royal Doulton and the Worcestershire and everything. So I could turn up with my turquoise plates. Some of them are chipped. But it kind of adds to that rustic feel. And I think people want something different. They want something colourful.
I think it's really interesting, especially when we're looking at entertaining at home at this time of year. This is the festive season. I think lots of people are doing the big Christmas Day dinner. I'll be honest, that's when all the forks and all the bits and bobs come out. And I've got some Spode china, and it only really gets used at Christmas. So, and my mum, you know, she had her wedding china, and that was always traditional that that came out at Christmas. So there was a real ceremony to the Christmas table. And I suppose for us ordinary folk, if I'm allowed to group you
talk
in on
to yourself.
You know, Christmas is a time when we can do something a bit more formally. However, at the same time, because I have enjoyed your delicious food, it's not just about the food, is it? It's the whole presentation. And I think what you're saying is, it's not just about following the rules. And I think I might break the rules this Christmas
Study.
And do something different.
Study.
It's about creating this visual feast as well as a delicious feast, isn't it? It's the flowers and the fruit and the way you dress the table and you layer up the dishes. And because it's sharing food, the whole table's dressed with beautiful ceramics and stuff.
You want to do storytelling, but also, I mean, I would dress up a table for my family to come over and
Just for like Sunday lunch type thing.
Yeah, I never use paper napkins, and they will tell you that it's always a proper napkin. I like doing that because it makes them feel very welcome. It's not trying to add formality to the situation. Even my niece and nephew, they do appreciate when you have a proper sort of a fabric napkin. And I'll always decide what to cook last minute for my family. But
I think I do as well, but for different reasons, Simon.
But to be honest, it's about the feeling that you evoke, and you want people to feel relaxed. In my home, someone's sitting on the floor, someone's sitting on the couch, someone's reading on the dining table. But when we're together, there's no phones. Mm. My niece will take one overhead shot. I have taught her how to do that. Yeah. She climbs on the table, she does one shot, then we have a hand shot, and then we're done, and then we can focus on sitting together. But definitely storytelling. But it shouldn't feel so contrived. And I'm guessing, obviously, you guys in the interior business, we all see things that are not natural looking, are quite contrived. We have photo shoots and stuff, etc. But when we have our events, they need to feel stylish, but still feel quite personable to the home that we're sort of catering in. That's really important.
Were you always interested in the presentation of the food and the table around it? Or what, did you start from the food and build up? Or were the two for you always good? The setting is as important as the food? Because sometimes, you know, a really simple dish of just pasta and a tomato sauce will look so much more exciting on a beautiful plate when there's a lovely vase of flowers next to it. For you, were the two always together, or did you get more into the styling?
So my mum was a person who could cook 50 dishes in 1 hour.
Wow.
But the kitchen looked like a bomb site. Right? And she'd be furious. She'd be so stressed, but she could cook really fast. My dad would just mosey in and make one salad as if he was making love to the salad and just carefully place a tomato. So Mum did all this cooking, but he'd have this love. He'd really select the right dish for the salad and just be boasting about his bloody salad. How beautiful is my salad?
Meanwhile, your mother's sweating in the background.
Exactly. So I think I'm a bridge of both of those things, that I can cook quite quickly, but I like looking even at the colour combinations of food. So if it's something that looks quite pale and quite white, I'm giving an example out of Obama dip, which is a yogurt with spinach.
Can we just,
did she just drop that in there?
She just dropped the Obama bomb. Tell us about the Obama dip.
The Obama dip has had more PR than me. If you type in the Obama dip, you'll see all the magazines and newspaper article is coming. It's just a simple dish of Greek yogurt with all the whey taken out, and then sautéed baby spinach and sea salt. I put rose dust, caramelised onions
rose
and garlic.
Rose
dust, yeah.
I did not know there was such a thing.
Do you have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning under the light of a full moon to harvest the dust off the roses? She's lost me. I think she's lovely, but she's lost me. I just don't think I'm getting rose dust in the Lidl. Am I?
Sounds so beautiful. So sorry, yes, back
so caramelised onions and garlic and the spinach, you know, and then swirled in this Greek yogurt. It's simple, but it goes with like butternut squash, it goes with salads, fish, chicken, lamb. But it was called Biryani Esfinage. And then Michelle Bama had it. That's one name I can drop. And she said, oh my God, this is amazing. And then just for fun, we said we should call it the Obama dip. So people and I like the story, but unfortunately we ended up cooking it for Donald Trump when he was here in London a couple of years ago, and we forgot to rename it.
Oh, you mean you forgot? I'm making inverted commas at the microphone.
So he was super annoyed.
I bet he was. How fabulous.
And then I had to, on the spot, think of something. I said, but sir, that's just a dip. You are the chicken. You're chicken royale. And he was, that's right, I'm a chicken. And I was like, trying to keep a straight face. My team were not happy that I ended up cooking for him, but the client that was cooking for had him as a guest. So,
well, he was on a state visit, wasn't he?
So, that's right.
And he was the chicken royale. I just love that. Donald the chicken.
Well, there was an orange-looking dip called Mohamora. But that would have been too obvious.
That would have been. I've seen this orange dip, sir. This one's for you.
See, we keep religion, politics out of our food.
Yeah.
We've often had people fight, this is Persian, this is Iraqi. And I just said, I have no room for that in here.
Yeah.
We're all influenced in some shape or form. And it's really hard to find origins of certain dishes. You've got a version of it, tzatziki in Greece. You have something called raita in the South Asian continent. So, you know, everything is a derivative of something. So I have this concept, food without borders.
Lovely. Like,
and that's why I didn't pigeonhole myself as a Persian chef or an Indian chef. I can combine like French food with Persian food. I can do Greek with Nordic food the other day.
Oh, interesting.
Food is all about layers. I mean, even today when I was setting up your cute table, it's about like, what am I trying to evoke? And I knew the lady of colour was coming, even though she's dressed in blue.
She's totally dressed. Can we just say that? For those who are not watching, she is totally dressed in, is it navy blue or black from head to foot?
No, I don't wear black. It's navy blue.
Oh, right. It's navy blue. And she had over the top. People, I'm giving it away. I'm giving it away. So I am wearing autumnal shades. Saima is wearing a bright pink jumper and orange socks.
Looks gorgeous.
Especially in honour of Sophie, who's turned up in navy blue corduroy jeans and a grey jumper. You heard that right. It's grey. She's had to take it off.
My rainbow trainers are at the door, though. Is that any? No, it's not. Okay, no. Sorry. I do apologise.
That's okay.
Really letting the colour side down.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
One question I know you're not name dropping too much, and I'm sure there's lots more you can tell us about who you've catered for, but to come back to that idea of people in those circles being on that dining circuit and sort of swooshing from fundraiser to fundraiser with similar sorts of food, does it, I mean, it must break your heart if these very thin people turn up and they don't eat. I mean, do you get lists of I can't have the bread, I can't have the sugar, I can't have the gluten, or I'm guessing they're confronted by your wonderful food and they think, oh, I'm just going to eat everything. But you are catering to a group of people who sort of don't really eat.
The celebrity clients that I tend to cook for, and they're quite a few, they hire me because they want to eat the food. Even the people who are
famously non-eaters.
Famously, you know, they work out twice a day. We had somebody who was in the Marvel movie recently who had been working out for 8 months for that role. And then when I bought I had like signature lamb chops, the Obama dip, he was eating like there was no tomorrow.
You've got 8 months of starvation to make up for.
You're not going to lose weight in one day. You're not going to put on that much weight in one day. So I think the way the food is styled, I think it's about abundance. And I think naturally everybody wants to get in on the story and be part of the dialogue. I once had a Hindu Brahmin. He said, I've never had lamb or beef or anything. And everybody was like, oh my God, this lamb is amazing. He goes, forgive me, God.
I'm going in.
And then dived in. I mean, it's like, it was worth it. So, yeah.
I think it is not just about feeding people, is it? It's just this whole expression of love and care. And
otherwise, why are you inviting people to your home? Yeah. When I have friends at my home, I'm going to put a few candles on, I'll make one main dish, and we'll have a couple of things to nibble on, and it will still look like I slaved over, and they're just so easily impressed. Okay. Anyway,
I want to know
we
the secrets to
the
this.
Tips.
We need the inside track on how do you make it look like you've gone to town, but actually.
Well, the easiest thing is like if let's just say there's no dietary requirements. Let's just say you're making a chicken dish. You know, you make that the be all and end all. So there's one dish that I do. It's just got chicken thighs, and you put that with red peppers, aubergines, potatoes, with some pomegranate molasses. Roast it in the oven, and then so you can do that in the morning before you go off to work or whatever. So once it's cooked, you can just put lots of herbs on it, lots of nuts, crumble some feta, put some lemon juice. You can put whatever you want on it. And that's the main thing.
So the herbs and the nuts and the feta, is that all just fresh sprinkled at the end before you serve it?
Exactly. Ooh, so clever. Then I put it on the middle of the table and I think, okay, that's the protein done. Then I might do a grain. There's a salad and there's a dip and there's a bread. So that, yeah.
Protein, dip, salad, bread. Grain.
Yeah.
Done.
That's it. Done.
And beautiful dishes. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yes. And then like I always set the table first. So then it sort of dictates to me what kind of meal I'm going to have.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So that's your inspiration, laying the table.
So the table setting comes first.
So let's just say, I'll give you two examples. So if I was having a couple of girlfriends around for dinner, I want to have something where we can easily sit and eat with our fork. We're not using a knife and fork. Feet on the couch, and we can just sort of eat and nibble and stuff. So when they arrive, you can have champagne, some drinks, and just have one dip or maybe a little pastry. You've got something warm, something cold, and then that's it. Nothing, you know, nothing complicated, and just sharing, and you're sitting and nibbling and sharing. And then I'll just bring one main out. So all I'm doing is actually cooking one main. You can get lovely pre-made packets of wild rice, you know, put them with orange zest and cranberry with wild rice, some some rocket through it with some blueberries. That's kind of my starter pack. So I already know either the fish or chicken or lamb is going to be the main thing. I've got to have some seasonal salad, maybe butternut squash. And so like you got the orange with the greens.
So you're thinking the colors it's going to be.
So when you put it on the table, it looks so pretty. You can put pomegranates or put loads of herbs, black grapes. It's like painting. You start building your table up.
She's a magician.
Well, we would need to have her skills, but I think there's a lot of tips in there that listeners can take away for not having to spend all Christmas Day in the kitchen, you know, and that's sort of the basic principles you've got there of the protein, the grain, the crunch and the salad. I mean, that's all really helpful. Even if people want to go traditional on Christmas Day, then, you know, the day after or the day before is perfect.
Clientele they want to have the family together. Nobody wants an opulent, over-the-top Christmas. None of my clients, even the uber cool.
Even though they're calling in private caterers and flying them in by helicopter. But it's not over-the-top, people. This is not over-the-top. This is fully pared back. There'll only be one private jet.
You know, somebody made a funny comment, oh, your clients are so high-end, rah-rah-rah. I said, but these lovely clientele of mine also donate heavily my food programs that I'm part of. So, you know, they want the best. That's why they come to me. But they still want something quite organic to them.
What's the alternative? What are we having? Yeah, what are we having?
So for Christmas, people are going for wood pigeon or they're going for chicken. And then I've got a German clientele that are going for goose. But again, it's just kind of understated. It's not going to be like gold candelabras.
That's so last year.
Paint a picture what a Hampstead kitchen Christmas table might look like. What's on the table? Have you got Brussels sprouts on there?
Oh, definitely Brussels sprouts.
Oh. How are we doing them? Because, I mean, this is the most divisive thing.
Always getting us doing them with bacon or bits. No.
So my Brussels sprouts, I take off the leaves.
The outside leaves.
Yeah. I blanch them.
Yeah. And then blanching, for those who don't, so that's what, sort of just 20 seconds in boiling water?
Literally probably 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then I just put lots of olive oil. I'll put some za'atar or some za'atar's like a dried thyme with sesame seeds or sumac or chili. And I'll roast them in the oven with some garlic. And then I'll just toss them in with like a dressing, either a mustard dressing, lots of pomegranates. This is a common theme with me. And then I'll make...
They look like little rubies.
Little rubies. Mm. So they're quite... Then they become quite charred and they have quite a nice sweet flavour. So nice. For Brussels
sprouts... I'm feeling sprouts on my menu this year.
Oh, really? They're getting back on.
And
then get some almonds,
put some olive oil, put some chilli or sea salt, roast those in the oven. Then you just kind of cut them loosely and then you put them and then they coat... Around the oil, around the Brussels sprouts.
Stick to the Brussels sprouts. Yeah.
I'm people starving. Yeah. We might have to stop now. I need to eat something.
Well, shall we?
Right, so let's go and have a look at this beautiful table, which we can glimpse in the distance.
Well, this is what I'm talking about. So this is Simon's complete art. Isn't this just a feast for the eye? So what I'm seeing is... dahlias dotted down the table and little bud vases, her signature pomegranates. This is such a great idea.
Yeah.
Grabbing fruit, but using it as a pop of colour against that lovely dark green tablecloth.
And that's a bowl of plums in a coloured glass dish as well. So that's another opportunity for colour. And grapes as well, just hanging over the edge.
So Simon, come on, talk us through the inspiration for this.
For this table?
Yeah.
Well, it had to be pink. But most of my clients, I think they've got their houses with the pine, everything. So I think
Are they quite neutral and grey, a lot of your clients' houses?
Not really.
Oh, good. So, I mean, billionaire's beige going on then. That's good to know.
Oh, I don't think they would like my food. So the way we live also dictates how we eat as well. So I got these lovely sort of cabbage plates.
Love a cabbage plate.
Somebody had their great grandma's crockery that had green cabbages and artichokes on them with this little gold thing sort of rimmed. So I used that and I layered it with her mother's cutlery. So
I think that's like really that nice. Lovely, so what you're saying is it's not about just bringing in everything new, because it could be over contrived. It's a little bit about using something that you own, but then giving it a fresh spin, maybe with, well, like even just with the plants and the fruits and the candles, that can, and the napkins.
Yeah, I always try and use seasonal produce, seasonal flowers. So my another Kate that I work with, Kate Musgrave of Unruly Flowers, I love working with her because she's all about seasonal organic. So I asked her, what are the seasonal flowers and how can I do my storytelling? So about there, we've got pistachio.
Oh, they're not branches. Dahlias, are they? They're chrysanthemums. Sorry, yeah, I've just realised. Dahlias aren't in season at the moment,
exactly,
are they?
So these are winter ones, so these are in season. So yeah, you know, the flower market is flooded with roses and hydrangeas and all these things. I wanted to use something that was, this is a underappreciated flower, but it's so beautiful and the colour
match.
It's
like a big purple pom-pom head.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So, and I didn't want to have, you know, there are sort of caterers and florists out there who do the whole table is just full of flowers. Like, where the hell does the food go?
Yes. Oh, most asked question.
Yes, exactly that. We've had that question a lot.
So today I just went for ruscus. I went for olive branches, pistachio branches. I've got like hanging aubergines.
Yeah, so just for listeners, we are now looking at this sort of cloud of branches that you've cleverly attached to the sort of the light. Yeah. It's almost like a pendant light, but it's a bar with light bulbs on. So very handy, actually. I'm thinking I need one of those in my house. It's quite clever, isn't it? Because then you can hang all this lovely green foliage from it. So you're not just having your flowers on the table, you're actually raising them above the table.
This is a flower cloud concept that I actually did for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, just before the lockdown, actually. I didn't want to have flowers on the table. We spray gold pomegranates, pears and lemons. And so that was the 50th wedding aspect to it. But we didn't want the balloons and the balloon arches. We just, no offence to people who like them, we just want our stuff to look a bit more organic. Natural. Flower clouds all over the ceiling. And then you just had this minimal cherry blossom because it was in March. So the table was very pear, so it was all about the food and the people enjoying that feast together. So this is what we're doing, and all these, and then there's like hanging grapes and figs,
there's food, chilies in here,
and
so clever.
Pomegranates as well. So
you've just wired them in, have you? With a bit
of
frosty
wired them in,
wire.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks impressive. Tell me, this is easy to do, or is it?
Oh no! If I have to tell you how it's going to be made, then I have to kill you.
Okay, because I'm having my kitchen redone in the new year because we've just moved house, and I'm suddenly thinking I need to rethink the lighting. I need to rethink the lighting so I can make a foliage cloud over the table at all times.
You don't need the lighting because we can attach it with invisible a wire. And so it looks like it's floating. That's actually the signature.
But I might just have then a few hooks put in the ceiling on a permanent basis, so you could always hang something down.
Brilliant. Great.
Isn't it? It's just wrapped around chicken wires. It's a bit fiddly, but I've learnt from the best. So she was supposed to do it today, but she's busy doing wreath workshops today.
Of course she is. It's Christmas.
Yeah.
So I sent her a picture and I did her do a good job. She goes, yes, you have. So
what a good idea.
Well.
And particularly that idea that we've got all the decoration, but it's not filling up the table. So there's room for all the food, which smells,
absolutely,
by the way, amazing.
Yeah. So just to tell you, like, obviously, these are actually from Pakistan.
These are the
napkins are from Iran. They're like so old, but I wanted to intertwine them just to put a bit of colour into the table.
So are these two napkins,
two
and maybe
napkins,
one and a pink one tied together.
Yeah. That's,
and then you just simply knotted them.
Because you always need another napkin
you
for
do.
Dessert, right?
Yeah.
You do. Or
clever.
One,
So clever. Rather than having two. And then the leaf thing goes with a natural sort of concept. And then we make sure that we don't get anything that's online. You know, sometimes we don't want things to be recognizable. We work with ceramicists that specifically make things for us or even for a specific event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
To keep that exclusivity.
Yeah. But you said at the beginning, you know, there's no waste and you will donate food. So this, what we don't eat, or these flowers, will you just keep them in your house until they're gone?
So this Friday, I mean, December's a very busy month for me anyway, so all of this is going to be reused, but all the vegetables I'm looking to put into a stew on Friday.
So the hanging aubergines and chilies I've got over my head are all going to go into this weekend's dinner.
No, I don't, because I don't want to throw stuff away. So the grapes are going into a salad that I'm doing with persimmon. I'm doing an event for a food bank called Sufra, and we're going to be cooking with some refugees and to raise money for people who are trying to settle in the UK, and also for the vulnerable this Christmas who actually can't afford to cook and heat up their homes and whatever. So all of this is going to be intertwined in that dinner. But all the events I've got, I'm going to be reusing and rehashing all of this. Amazing. So it's that pay it forward kind of philosophy as well.
Well, it's something we all need to live by, isn't it? And we're aware that Christmas can be a very excessive time of year, both in the way we decorate our homes and the food we bring in. So just thinking about eking it out, using leftovers, eating your decorations. I mean, that's just a whole other level of genius.
Do you have, Saima, talking of donating to food banks and all the philanthropy you do around the whole sort of ethos behind the Hampstead Kitchen, is there a space on your website for people who perhaps want to contribute to food banks or to you to pass it on? So if they go to your website, thehampsteadkitchen.com.
There is a page for philanthropy, and it shows all the organisations that I help, both in the UK and abroad. You can pick and choose which one feels more akin to you.
Yeah.
But also, just go on your local council site. It always will list down your local food bank. I mean, I put out a post yesterday saying, is anybody alone on Christmas? You can go in the morning and just pick up people to take to the centre so they can have their main meal, or you can deliver food. So I think all of us can do, spend half a day. Like this Friday, my friends who work in finance was like, ask me, how can we help? And obviously you need money, you also need volunteers, but some people just want to take the day off and actually see what they see the people that they're contributing to. It just, I think then those kind of people would have a much more, they'll enjoy it or look at their Christmas from a different angle. So yeah, of course we should get together, we should celebrate and be together, but I think a lot of people are feeling it's a bit more pared down, but people are really thinking outside the box of how to make it special. But a lot of people are not giving Christmas presents to each other. Their Christmas present is, okay, I rather contribute. We're doing an event for a client where rather than the family buy presents, they've decided that each person is paying for their seat at the table, right, on Christmas Eve. So a bunch of friends have got together and I'm going to go and cook a lovely meal for them.
Lovely.
And that's their Christmas present.
Yeah, to each other.
That's such an... Because it's experiences, isn't it? And a shared food with people you love around a table.
Absolutely. Perfect. And if you think about the last 2 years, we haven't been able... There were so many lockdowns. This Christmas, I think people are so excited to be together that I don't even think... Like, the food is... you know, the food is the focal point, but actually it's about people coming together. You don't want, if your host is nervous and stressed out, no matter how beautiful the setting, how beautiful the food is, it's not going to be a great party. Things are going to go wrong. Your kitchen, my kitchen is an absolute bomb site today. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get it clean before you guys arrive, but this is everyday life, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I normally have parties, my kitchen just looks like a pigsty the next day. And then I wake up, put some music on, and I clear up. So the whole point is just enjoying yourself. So, what have I got for you? I had 20 minutes to put this together.
Oh, oops, my God, stop. It would have taken me about a fortnight.
So, what I have is white fava beans with a red pesto dressing, and that's got parsley. Then I have roasted turmeric cauliflower that's got mint and parsley with pomegranates and some toasted nuts. Then I've got Praveen Olivier, which is like... olives marinated in pomegranate molasses, a little bit of aubergine, and I've got some walnuts and some pomegranates. You see the common theme of pomegranates,
yeah,
right? And then for main, I've got a pan roasted sea bass that's got dried thyme, dill, garlic, some lemon juice, just pan fried, pan roasted, very simple, with some cherry tomatoes. And then I've got a wild rice salad that's got blueberries, smoked olive oil with toasted pecans and rocket. That's all.
That's all. And again, it's the it's the colour. I'm seeing yellow and green and red, and they're all just
deep,
sort of
rich plums and apricots and
exactly.
purples. Never out of my way, I'm a seat.
Enjoy.
Where would you like us to sit?
Should I help myself? Or are you sharing? How do you do it?
You can start. Hey, there's no rules when it comes to my food. For sure.
So all this talking about food is absolutely making me famine too.
Oh, Simon, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
What a story. I mean, it's like the plot of a Jilly Cooper novel, isn't it? So if you fancy a ghostwriter for your story, Simon, if only so I can find out some of the names behind all these amazing stories. But all that remains now is for us to wish you all a very happy Christmas and holiday.
And we'll be back next year. But in the meantime, you can find us for chat on Instagram, where I'm Sophie Robinson Interiors. She's mad about the house, and Simon can be found at the Hampstead Kitchen, which is spelt as it sounds without the E at the end.
Or you can obviously find us on our blogs. Mine is madaboutthehouse.com, hers is sophierobinson.co.uk, and of course you can find Simon at thehampsteadkitchen.com. But for now, thanks to our producers Kate Taylor and Sarah Cudden of Feast Collective, and thanks so much to you for listening.
And a final huge thank you to our sponsor, Anthropology, for supporting this episode. And do not forget to use that generous 20% discount with the code SPARKLE at checkout.
Bye for now, and we'll see you in the great indoors.